Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. How do city planners decide what to put where? Municipal zoning laws and planning strategies for many people can seem like a sleepy subject. Until you want to open a business, buy a home, rent a place, attend a school, play in a park, or even ride a horse. Just about anything. City zoning laws and planning strategies have wide-ranging effects across every sector of society. Communities struggle with where to put things, like an industrial park, a multifamily complex, a wastewater treatment plant, a jail or prison, and more. That's the job of city planners. Stephanie Powers is the Director of Planning at the City of Central Point and joins the exchange to help us understand the challenges and opportunities cities face when they grow. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about the City of Central Point, Oregon.
The City of Central Point, Oregon is a medium-sized city. We're just a little over 19,000 in population. We're in the heart of the Rogue Valley along the Bear Creek Greenway. And we have a small downtown that's been growing over time since I've joined the team at the city. The city's been working on refining its vision and implementing that vision to be a small town that's safe, family-friendly, and continues to be so even as it grows at a rapid pace.
So you're situated along the I-5 corridor,
yes.
And
yeah.
You're just north of Medford.
Correct.
Okay, and you've been growing.
We have been, yeah.
So talk about that growth. How do you manage growth?
Well, there are a lot of different aspects of managing growth. We've got long-range plans that forecast out 20 years to tell us, approximately how quickly we're going to grow, how many people we're going to add, what our housing needs are, and how we need to keep pace with jobs, parks, and open space areas for people to enjoy, as well as the fundamental public services and infrastructure needed to make a city function. So we give a lot of forethought to how we're going to grow, where that's going to occur, so that as we get a land development application, we're not responding just in that moment.
Right. And you said you're just over 19,000, but you have about 7,500 housing units. And according to the census, that's an increase of 2,000 in your population over the last decade, with an increase of more than 1,000 units in the same time period. So all of this kind of fits neatly into 4 square miles.
Yes.
Right?
That's right.
How do you do that?
Oh, man. So we have different zoning districts throughout the city, areas where we have higher densities of housing where you might see more multifamily types, spreading out to lower density types of housing like single family, detached or attached homes. And so what we do is we make sure that as we grow, that we can fit all of that into that 4 square mile area.
It sounds like a Tetris puzzle.
It kind of is. It's very involved, and if you enjoy mapping, it's kind of fun to go through that process.
Well, I was looking at your economic plan. It says that you guys are projecting to surpass the population of Ashland over the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm. That's possible. And I think that's partly because we've just recently expanded our urban growth boundary. So that's an area that's by design intended to accommodate that 20-year land supply that the city needs based on those forecasts that we were just talking about. I think the city of Ashland hasn't had the opportunity to amend its urban growth boundary recently to bring in as much land as we have. I think we just added 444 acres for a combination of mostly housing, some parks and open space, and those supportive uses, such as neighborhood commercial and our public facilities. So there's a lot more for us to grow into.
Okay. So for people that don't know what a city planner does,
mm-hmm.
What's your day-to-day look like? What do you do?
My day-to-day? Well, every day is a little bit different, but generally speaking, we break our department down into 2 primary areas functionally. So we have what's called long-range planning, where that's where we're looking at forecasting growth and making sure that we have the goals and policies that provide that framework for implementing regulations that you would see in a zoning code, and that having to do with, what uses go where, what the densities are, what land development standards would apply. So we look at those long-range plans. We make sure that we're complying with statewide planning goals, that our plans are up to date. And then on the other side, we have land development review, which is typically called current planning. And that's really where we respond to folks who come into our front counter on any given day. It could be a property owner, somebody looking to buy property in the city. It could be a larger developer wanting to get started with a project. And we walk them through the application process, what would be required, what the time it's going to take for them to get through, to get an entitlement for the project they want to have. And so we do a lot of public education, outreach across the counter, a lot of problem solving to help people get to where they want to go, but to do so in alignment with the community's regulations and the overall vision, you know, always touching back to the vision that we have to be a small town as we grow. So really, that's a lot of what we do. It's a lot of interacting with others. And I would say that the less sparkly stuff that we do would be when we have to sit down and write reports and findings of fact and conclusions of law, which is making sure that all of the recommended actions that we would present to our planning commission or city council, that they're legally justifiable based on an analysis of evidence that's submitted into the record for an application and how that demonstrates compliance with the laws that we have in effect. So it can get very technical from that standpoint, but it's just a mix of, you know, that longer range planning and then the implementing actions and always working well with people across the counter to help them understand the process and help them move forward through that process most efficiently and effectively.
My guest is Stephanie Powers. She's the Director of Planning at the City of Central Point. So Stephanie, it sounds like when someone comes into your office, that becomes a catalyst for your team to go into action. So what if someone comes into your office and they want to build something that isn't quite the right fit for Central Point?
So that's happened several times where folks will come in and they have a vision for what they want to do with their property. And what I perceive our job to be is to go through the code with them to really, first of all, we'll back up a step. The first part is really understanding what their objectives are. What is it they're trying to achieve? Because sometimes we can find a middle ground. We can help them identify another pathway to get to where they want to go, but also comply with the code. So the first step is to understand what they're trying to accomplish with their project, and then to identify what zoning district they're in, what uses are allowed, or maybe if they require another type of permit approval, like a conditional use permit, to look at the standards that are in place and to determine where they're meeting those standards and maybe where some additional work might need to be done. When I work with somebody at the counter, or anyone on my team works with somebody, whether at the counter or in a pre-application conference, what we try to do is we try to look at, you know, if it's not working exactly how they envision, do we see opportunities or areas on a specific piece of property where maybe they could make some adjustments and come into compliance? So I'm a big fan of mapping, as I mentioned earlier. I'm a big fan of drawing out areas where we have area in a buildable envelope and just looking for innovative approaches to solving those problems.
When you talk about zoning and making sure that they're in compliance, the zoning exists, mm-hmm. but it didn't always. So how did that happen and who decided and how does that change if need be?
So I guess zoning was first established in the early 1900s. In this country. And it's trickled out to all of the states in the nation now. We have state enabling laws that allow local municipalities to enact zoning laws, which really look at where we're going to put certain land uses and how those will be regulated. You know, before that time, it was really based on what was needed. You know, where was the main street when settlers first came to Central Point? You know, if you're familiar with Pine Street, we have a very wide street there. And if you walk around downtown, you'll notice that all of the surrounding residential streets are about 80 feet wide so that people could turn their horse and buggies around in our downtown. So, the city was really formed based on need. They established where their central business district was going to be, and then they built housing around it. Over time in Central Point, things changed because the railroad was going to extend down into southern Oregon. And so Medford was successful in getting a railroad depot, and Central Point wanted one as well. So what the citizens did is they actually responded to that need before the time of zoning to reorient their town to provide business frontage along what is now Highway 99 and our Artisan Corridor, which parallels that railroad track. And eventually we did get that railroad depot. But I think you can see it's really largely based on supply and demand and what was needed in the community. I think over time, the reason why zoning became enacted, I think there are a number of reasons. Some of them, you know, you hear about life safety concerns, the need to, reduce the potential for fire by having, fire breaks or setbacks between buildings. But there were other reasons that zoning came into play in some communities, which were a little less admirable in terms of trying to create communities that supported certain interests and people at the expense of others.
So we're talking about land deeds and racial covenants.
Yes.
And so that affected and influenced zoning laws.
Yes, it did. Yes. And actually, I think what it was is more an application of those zoning laws to achieve those outcomes, which in a book that I just read did a really great job of outlining what that looked like in a number of cities across the nation, which I didn't previously recognize as happening in the community that I'm living and working in. But it was certainly enlightening. And I think that level of awareness about the history of zoning and how it's potentially impacted the community that we live in gives us the ability to really sort of change pace and be more aware and assure that policies like that don't get applied, whether, by intent or just a lack of awareness.
Okay. And the name of that book that you're reading?
Key to the City, How Zoning Shapes Our World by Sarah Bronin.
So what are some of the biggest challenges you faced in your role as city planner?
The biggest challenges? I would say that the thing that I'm most passionate about in city planning is really effectuating the community's vision for its preferred future, doing it in a way that's sustainable for the community, that creates a place that allows individuals and families and places to thrive. In order to do that, you really need to be engaged in a two-way conversation with the people in your community, stakeholders, citizens, business owners, elected officials, volunteers. And maintaining that communication can sometimes be extremely challenging. If you come out to one of our planning commission meetings, you might see one, two, three people in the audience, if any at all, unless there's a highly contentious item on the agenda, such as a development that people don't like, that they don't understand. And then it can be very difficult to have those effective conversations in the heat of the moment when we should have been having them when we were talking about policies previously. So I think that maintaining that two-way communication, getting people to come out and participate, I'd say that's the most challenging part, but it's also the most important.
How do you educate the public on the importance of what you do and in zoning and planning that affects their lives?
I try to use every public forum that I'm a part of to approach what I do from the lens of a teacher. So I recognize that when I'm talking to the Planning Commission, the City Council, or Citizens Advisory Committee, or hosting a town hall meeting, that a lot of the folks, or some of the folks in the audience, it may be their first interaction with their local government. It may be the first time they've ever met a city planner. They don't understand the basis for it potentially. And so I always try to tell a story from beginning with a middle and an end about what it is we're doing, why we're there, what needs to happen between the beginning of an application or a project we're working on and what the outcome is. And then I fill in the details so that everyone has the same basis for understanding what we're doing, what's involved, and how they can participate in it. I think one of the things that can be challenging in that forum, especially in a public hearing, is that there are some strict legal limits on how much conversation can occur. So a lot of that approach has to happen during the staff report, where the staff member or the planner gives an overview of what is happening and an analysis and breakdown and recommendation. Other things we do, I mentioned town hall meetings. We have a newsletter that goes out to everyone in the community on a monthly basis. So we try to put in quarterly articles about land use and development and different program areas. And then I just talk to people.
Excellent. Let's hold it right there. We need to take a short break.
Great.
My guest is Stephanie Powers. She's the Director of Planning at the City of Central Point. We're talking about the important work of city planning. I'm Mike Green. The Exchange will return with Stephanie in a moment. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Stephanie Powers. She's the Director of Planning at the City of Central Point, Oregon. We're talking about the important work of city planning. And before the break, you were talking about how you get the word out about this important work you do so that the residents are not just screaming with pitchforks when they're unhappy about something, but rather they're having a continual conversation.
Yeah.
So given that societies are under constant change, new technologies, demographic shifts, people moving in and out, businesses opening and closing, climate change, wildfires, pickleball courts, how do planners keep up? And more importantly, how do they plan ahead?
That is another major challenge, I think, that we face because there are so many important issues of our time that require, thoughtful consideration and a holistic planning process. I would say that keeping up with that is, staying abreast of what's happening with the legislature, with changes to our state laws, understanding what's happening in terms of best planning practices. I think when you look at communities all across Oregon, Washington, and the country, and learning from other planners, we have the opportunity to see what practices are working and not working in other communities, and we can learn from each other. So there's a lot of ongoing professional development to keep up with just what's happening in the industry in terms of land use and community planning. And then really effective time management, to be quite honest, Mike. We have to block our time to make sure that we are moving our land development projects within current planning forward in an efficient manner, and then also planning out our year. And in Central Point, we actually have a 2-year biennial budget. So we set our plans for what it is we want to accomplish during that 2-year period on a regular basis and sort of reverse engineer back. It is challenging, but it's worthwhile, and definitely, we do our best to keep on track.
Well, you're never starting from scratch.
No.
You're always inheriting someone else's problems and conditions that you can't control and trying to effectually get to the place that you envision. So what do planners do when they inherit restrictive and constraining problems they didn't create, like you mentioned earlier about racial covenants and land use where you have single family homes and not in my backyard type of attitudes, when new projects need to be built? How do you transform a culture that you inherit into one that you feel good about passing to the next generation?
I think that that's not something that happens overnight. I think that takes clarity. First of all, understanding what the problem is or the problems are that you're dealing with and wanting to transform, and ultimately who we want to be and where we want to go as a community and as a society. And really breaking down what parts of that problem we can have some control over. So zoning and land use management provide us with some really important and effective tools to help combat some of that. And some of it, let's just take the case of single family zoning. In the state of Oregon, we no longer have exclusionary zoning where you can have a single family zoning district that doesn't allow other forms of middle housing if you're in a city that's over 10,000 in population. So what that means is if you live in a district that historically only allowed you to have larger lot sizes and single family detached dwellings, now you can have 2-family dwellings. Or in the case of cities over 25,000 in population, you can also have triplexes, fourplexes, and cottage clusters, which are also called middle housing types. And what I love about middle housing is this is a way to provide other options for individuals and families in our communities at a scale that feels like a single family home, but provides more units. And you see them all over when you walk around Ashland or Medford. And, it's a trend that you see in some of the older parts of cities across the country. So I think that's a really good example of something we can do with zoning. Reducing or eliminating parking minimums is another important thing that we can do, while also making investments in our transportation system to provide meaningful connections in our bicycle and our sidewalk transportation networks, as well as planning for and promoting increased use of transit. That's not going to change our community overnight, but I think there's, I can't remember where this came from exactly, but there is a saying that says that the best place to plant a tree was 20 years ago, right? And so we've got to start now.
Okay, so I actually live in Central Point. I moved there 10 years ago. And what surprised me was that in every neighborhood, there's a park. Talk about the importance of green space.
Oh, my goodness. Everybody loves to be outside, I think. I think there's just something wonderful about having places to engage in both active and passive recreation. And one of the things that we do in Central Point is we study our need for those areas. We have, the Bear Creek Greenway. We put a lot of time and energy into the greenway management, particularly since the Alameda fires. And we're planning to have, sort of a destination park that provides a lot of opportunity there. We look at providing neighborhood parks, which are the smaller parks, usually about 2 acres in size at the maximum level, to provide playgrounds for children, to have wide open spaces where you can play ball, sit on a bench, listen to the sound of the birds. And then we have larger parks like Don Jones Park, which is really popular in Central Point on the east side, where we have a splash pad and a lot of other facilities like the tennis courts and maybe pickleball in the future. I'm not sure about that. But we plan for that, knowing that as we grow our community, that's a really important part of having that small town feel, is having places where people can just enjoy themselves.
My guest is Stephanie Powers. She's the director of planning at the City of Central Point. So where I live, there's a mix of socioeconomics, from middle class single family homes to multifamily units right next door. And then there are duplexes for retired residents. And right down the street, elementary school, there's a church, large retirement community. And then there's new construction, mixed use, where you have businesses at the bottom and people living at the top. In the Twin Creeks area with the large soccer park. And, it's like a master plan community. So talk about the idea of equity and inclusion that went into creating an environment like that, which, by the way, we love.
Yes. So Twin Creeks came about, that master plan was approved in the year 2000. Prior to that master plan approval, that land was in our urban growth boundary, and the owners of that property wanted to bring it into the city and to do just a standard subdivision, which might have had a 10-acre park at most, and then maybe between 400 and 600 housing units that really are... at the time, there was a lot of development where you'd see larger lots with, on cul-de-sac streets, and not a lot of a sense of place like you'd see in Twin Creeks. So at the time, the planning director had learned about transit-oriented development, which is where you have, higher density mixed-use projects where you're providing those housing units above or alongside commercial opportunities where people can live, work, and play all in an area that has access to a transit hub. So the planning director at the time worked with the landowners and was able to influence them to take part in this master planning process. And what they did is they transformed this 230-acre tract of land into something that is really unique and special in Southern Oregon. We have over 48 acres of parks and open space in that area now, where previously there may have been about 10 acres. We've got this new business district there where we do have a number of professional offices, coffee shops, wine bars, places that people can hang out and gather. And that's also next to, you mentioned the multifamily housing development that's in that area that provides some market rate affordable housing for people in our communities that are, you know, families to singles. And having that mix of folks is really important, I think, because it brings everybody along. It gives everybody access to these amazing community amenities, the opportunity to gather, to get access to transit, which I do believe RVTD this year is actually extending a transit route into Twin Creeks, which has been in the plans for over 20 years. And so that's finally coming to fruition. So it is a really exciting time. And that will allow folks in that development, maybe who don't own a car and can't drive to work, the opportunity to get anywhere in the Valley, whether they're going to be going to Rogue Community College in White City or downtown Medford, or traveling south here to Ashland to attend SOU or to another place of employment or shopping. So, yeah.
One of the things that I love about that area is that you have these large retirement communities that are walkable right there next to a large park where you have lots of youth having their soccer games, picnics, or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's movies in the park. There's lots of activity right there in a multi-generational environment.
Yeah.
So you're bringing everybody together in an open environment in walkable space. Was that intentional?
I believe so, yeah. And actually, the developers of the Twin Creeks project have really placed an increasing emphasis over the years on developing what are called age-in-place dwellings. This is recognizing that as we age, that some people don't want to or can't afford to move into a retirement facility. And so if we can think ahead and build units that would allow folks to have their bedroom on the ground floor, to have it be more accessible and also affordable, being very important. So I do think that it was intentional for Twin Creeks to include the larger scale retirement homes, but also we're starting to see more of these age-in-place dwellings popping up throughout that development and other areas in our community.
Well, talk about how your department coordinates with the needs of first responders, like firefighters and police, and how you think about transportation flows through the city, speed limits, stop signs, all that stuff.
Yeah, so, in terms of our long-range planning program, we do look at the transportation network from a holistic standpoint. So we look at the needs of the community in terms of how many trips are going to be generated for different land uses based on growth over time. But we also coordinate with other agencies. So we, in planning, will coordinate with our Public Works Department, which is the road authority for the city. We also work with Fire District 3 in Central Point to understand what the fire access needs are and to assure that we have goals and policies in our long-range plans that accommodate their needs. And then making sure that in our land development review process under current planning, that they're invited to the table and informed about every single project that comes to the city. So if there are concerns about the way that a building is being constructed or about roadway access, those are addressed early on in the land development review process and incorporated so that we have safer communities. We're hopefully reducing over time wildfire risk as we start to learn more about things like firewise landscaping and that type of thing, which has become an increasing topic of conversation when we sit around the land development review table.
Well, Central Point has both urban, semi-urban, suburban, I guess, and rural regions. How do you think about where you're going to put your businesses and business growth?
So the primary areas where we have business growth in the city have been established for quite a while, and that would be along Pine Street in our central business district, along Highway 99, which is also a major arterial roadway. Those are our highest volume roadways. And then East Pine Street out toward Biddle. That's the other major commercial area that we have in the city. We also have what are called neighborhood commercial centers, recognizing that you want to be able to have like little corner stores or other opportunities, whether it be a little coffee shop or a professional office or a dry cleaner that's in proximity to your residential neighborhood. So you know, we look at creating nodes or activity centers within our community. And this is something that's not unique to Central Point. It's being done by communities everywhere. But that's generally, you know, you want to cite things relative to your transportation system and to where people are.
Okay, well, we've got about 30 seconds. So what's your big vision?
Oh, my big vision. My big vision for the city of Central Point is to continue to work to help the community reach its preferred vision for the future, which is to maintain that small town feel, to get people more engaged in the local planning process, and to be courageous and innovative in how we do that, being aware of the mistakes of the past and the ones we're going to make now, and to learn and adapt and just to continue to give our best and do what's required.
Well, that's why I like living there. That's all the time we have for today's exchange. Thank you, Stephanie, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Mike.